The climate is changing. So are we. I'm Laura Lynch, and I host What on Earth? That's CBC's Climate Solutions podcast. Twice a week, we take you around the world to find the people who are trying to build a better future for all of us. We explore indigenous science, new technologies. We talk openly about mental health and climate anxiety. We also take your smart questions all the time. Come find What on Earth wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning. I'm Marcia Young. Donald Trump has been held in contempt of court by the judge presiding over his hush money trial. Trump has been fined $9,000 for repeatedly violating a gag order. It barred him from making any public statements about witnesses, jurors, and others connected to the case. The judge also warned Trump that he will be jailed if he continues to violate the order. Today, private banker Gary Farrow is back on the stand. Farrow worked closely with Trump's former attorney Michael Cohen to set up bank accounts. One was used to pay adult film star Stormy Daniels. Trump is facing 34 charges for allegedly trying to cover up those payments. The International Court of Justice says it is deeply concerned about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. But today, it refused to order Germany to stop arming Israel. It has been considering that request from Nicaragua for several weeks. Freelance reporter Rebecca Collard brings us the latest on the ruling.
The court, by 15 votes to one, finds that the circumstances, as they now present themselves to the court, are not such as to require the exercise of its power under Article 41 of the statute to indicate provisional measures.
Judge Nawaf Salam, head of the International Court of Justice, laying out the court's rejection of Nicaragua's request. It wanted the court to order Germany to halt military exports to Israel. The ruling will be welcomed by the German government, which dismissed the case as baseless, arguing Berlin's weapons transfers to Israel are minimal, even though they have increased tenfold since the war in Gaza started in October. Shahad Hamouri is a lecturer in law at Kent University and says while the ruling today rejected Nicaragua's request, it could still have an impact.
Perhaps the whole thing from this case is deterrence and to act as a legal scarecrow, so to speak, of states that we are watching.
The case showed that powerful states like Germany could find themselves under the scrutiny of international law, forced into transparency about issues like what sort of military equipment they are exporting and to whom.
I think the most important thing is that we're seeing more litigation in relation to the arms trade and in relation to third state party responsibility. And this is still at the first stage of the proceedings.
The German government is also facing multiple challenges to its military exports to Israel in domestic courts. Rebecca Collard for CBC News, Berlin.
In New York. Protesters are occupying an administration building at Columbia University. Dozens of people stormed Hamilton Hall overnight, breaking windows and tossing around furniture. The protesters are part of a growing pro-Palestinian demonstration being held at campuses across the U.S., but some school officials say Jewish students are feeling unsafe. Mahmoud Khalil is a negotiator with the Student Coalition at Columbia.
The liberation of Palestine and the Palestinians and the Jewish people are intertwined. Anti-Semitism and any other form of racism has no place on this campus and in this movement.
Some student groups are demanding their universities cut ties with Israeli institutions, and they say they are willing to keep the pressure on for as long as it takes. But officials at Columbia say they're risking their education. The school began suspending students who refused to leave the encampment. Here at home, McGill University says it will work to de-escalate before asking for police to help with the encampment there. Dozens of tents are still pitched on the lawn of the school's downtown Montreal campus. Pro-Palestinian protesters have also set up an encampment at the University of British Columbia's Point Grey campus. Federal Justice Minister Arif Virani is criticizing recent comments by the Conservative leader.
It's very important on something as fundamental as Canadians' constitutional rights to show leadership. In fact, that is exactly what he is not showing. He's showing that he is effectively quite willing to follow the lead of many premiers in this country who've decided to use or threaten the use of the notwithstanding clause.
In a speech to police officers in Ottawa last night, Pierre Poilievre promised to change bail rules. He said he would bring in stricter punishments for serious offenders. And as Tom Perry reports, his language is raising questions about how Poilievre would enact that plan.
Thank you very much to all of you in blue.
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre speaking to the Canadian Police Association, offering his usual tough-on-crime message with a few flourishes.
Multiple murders will only ever come out of jail in a box.
Promising to keep anyone convicted of multiple murder in maximum security and force them to serve consecutive sentences.
And all of my proposals are constitutional, and we will make sure we will make them constitutional using whatever tools the Constitution allows me to use to make them constitutional. I think you know exactly what I mean.
Poilievre didn't say which tools, but in the past, he has talked about using the notwithstanding clause.
There has not been a thought given to the long-term impact on Canada.
Errol Mendez teaches constitutional law at the University of Ottawa. He says going after the worst criminals may be good politics, but Mendez says no federal government has ever used the notwithstanding clause, which allows governments to temporarily override the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. He worries doing so would set a bad precedent.
Essentially, it's the straw that'll break the camel's back and lead to eventually the denigration of the Charter as a whole.
In his speech, Poilievre said as Prime Minister, he would be accountable to the people, that it would be up to them to decide whether his laws were constitutional. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
Efforts to reach a global treaty on plastic pollution are proving contentious. The fourth round of talks wrapped up in the early hours this morning in Ottawa. For the first time, negotiators started discussing some draft text for the treaty. But the delegate from Rwanda says it does not go far enough.
The proposal for intercession work has decided to ignore the elephant in the room.
He says right now there is too much talk about recycling and reusing plastics, and the text needs to address plastic manufacturing. Rwanda and Peru helped launch the treaty talks. The committee has agreed to keep working on the proposed language. New data from Statistics Canada shows Canada's GDP increased in February, but the 0.2% jump is less than what some economists had predicted. CBC senior business correspondent Peter Armstrong explains.
This is, once again, the story of an economy keeping its head ever so slightly above the water. Economists had thought they'd see a 0.4% gain. GDP in February came in well below that, but still eked out a small gain. And we also got the advance estimate for March. Now, this is just an estimate, and it will be subject to revisions, but it gives us the first picture of the full first quarter of this year. So it takes on an added importance. And you add them all together, and we have 0.5% in January, 0.2% in February, and StatCan says GDP was unchanged in March. So that's a better than many had expected strong first quarter. And yet it's also not really the sign of a booming economy either. If anything, it really does sort of thread the needle the Bank of Canada was looking for. Peter Armstrong, CBC News, Toronto.
A major change is coming to the federal government's hybrid work model. Later this year, public servants will have to be back in the office 3 days a week. Two major unions say they have been blindsided by the decision. But as Stu Mills reports, it is something politicians have been wanting for a while.
Well, 3 days is a good start.
Premier Doug Ford repeating the call he made a month ago while hinting he won't be happy until workers are behind their desks Monday to Friday.
How many days a week do we work? 7 days? 24/7?
A federal government source not authorized to speak about the matter confirmed with Radio Canada the change could come into effect in September. Details that were first reported in the French language newspaper Le Droit. Minister of Public Services and Procurement Jean-Yves Duclos said individual ministries would have a say in where employees work.
All departments need to contribute to the conversations that are taking place.
Well, it absolutely catches us by surprise.
Stephanie Montreuil is the head of public affairs at the Professional Institute of the Public Service, one of the largest labor unions in Canada. She wouldn't speculate about how members of her union might react, but in downtown Ottawa, Tanis LaBelle offered a glimpse of what the change would mean for her.
By coming in, like, it adds to my workday. It takes away from my family life.
with a major reduction in the number of offices owned by Ottawa on the horizon and no formal announcement about the new hybrid policy, public servants are left with questions not only about where they'll work, but how and when. Stu Mills, CBC News, Ottawa.
And Stu has more on this story at cbcnews.ca. It is the most read story on our main page. That is the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm Marcia Young.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.